In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Well, we all know that love is the basic requirement of our faith, don't we? Love God, love others, and love ourselves. That's about as succinct a description of the Christian life as there ever was. Yet many of us are just plain uncomfortable talking about love. I think it might help if we started to view the Holy Bible as a love story, or better, a collection of love stories revealing what it means to love. In our Old Testament reading today, Jeremiah is not what we sometimes would think of as being in a loving state of mind. His prophesying has failed to save Jerusalem, and he is seething with discouragement and self-pity, and so much anger that he even accuses God of being a fraud. Can any of us relate to frustration and disappointment at the circumstances of our world and of our lives? I can. But what does this have to do with love? First, it tells us about God's love. A wounded Jeremiah takes his bitter complaint to God, and God does not reject him. God's love begins by accepting us as we are, where we are, no matter what. Second, this is about how we ought to communicate with God, and that is with transparent honesty. We waste precious energy and time dressing up our wounds and putting on a happy face. Do we think that pleases God? I think some of us may be afraid that we can't be our true selves, that if we tell God how we really feel or share with God our real selves, God would surely reject us. That's a fatal mistake. God's unconditional acceptance of us, God unconditionally accepts us, and so we ought to be honest with him. Once we are in communication with God, God draws us into a deeper relationship. Apparently, God's motivation is to change us. The circumstances that cause our pain may be unchanged, as with Jeremiah, but the hold that those circumstances have on us are broken because we are changed. Paul's letter to the Romans teaches us about loving others. Paul says that love must be genuine. It must be real, like the love between God and Jeremiah. But here's the kicker. Paul knows that it's exponentially harder to love people who are altogether different than us, or whose words and actions hurt us, trouble us. Hey, I don't need a lot of help loving the people in my life who support me and treat me well and say good things about me. It's everybody else. Those others who are difficult to love for one reason or another. That's who Paul is challenging the Romans and us to love. And it doesn't seem natural to love the difficult other, the hostile other, the enemy. The world's way, the natural way, is to oppose them, to defeat them, or to ignore them. So to love this way is to cut against the natural flow of the world. It takes a decision of the will, bolstered by the Holy Spirit, to enter into that flow of God's love. The key characteristic in Paul's description of love is its distinctive quality of selflessness. This placing of well-being of others above our own is a posture of love that inclines us to humility, nonviolence, and good deeds. This kind of love, the Greek word for it is agape, is very different and more demanding than other kinds of love that we might call to mind or that the world has on offer. Very different. So we need to ask ourselves, is the standard of love that Paul lays out even possible? Can we love our troublesome neighbors? And if so, how? These are the things that we need to discuss. Finally, we come to our gospel story, which reveals the means by which we grow in love. It's called dying to self. And it's how we can love more, love better, love like Jesus. We need to understand the vivid language of this passage because it is in no way hyperbole, but our actual daily spiritual work. It sounds sort of terrible to die to self, but this is not about self-destruction, it's about regeneration. The cross is the great symbol for love because it represents the necessary killing off of the tendencies in us to be selfish, to hoard, to always want more. The killing off of our insatiable appetite to have it all our way. These impulses in us, this sin, is so strong and so destructive to love, says the gospel, that we can't afford to let it run its course. We've got to actively kill it. The cultural anthropologist René Girard explains many of our selfish desires and how they work. In our natural state, according to Girard, we want things not for their own sake, but because others want them. Without even consciously registering it, we see what others have or what others value and want, and we come to desire them also. If left to our own devices, we humans automatically, unreasonably, and unconsciously imitate each other's desires until we are held spellbound by them. Consumer advertising depends on this. We know it's true. How is it that all my neighbors drive the same kind of car as I do? And the clothes I wear sure look a lot like my friends, don't they? If imitative desire is taken far enough, we eventually lose our individual character. This is the kind of life that Jesus calls gaining the whole world, but losing our souls. It's self-obsessed, monochromatic, and banal. It's a lost life. But thanks be to God, because of God's genuine love, we have another way. Whether we call it the way of the cross or the way of love, those things mean the same thing. It's using our reason and will to train our attention on Christ and the cross, to fall in love with Jesus again and again until all that separates us from Him is dead. As we do that, Christ reveals our unique beauty. We discover that the adventures in life that bring real transformation, joy, and lasting happiness all come from genuine love. The good news today, my brothers and sisters, is that God's love is genuine and potent. Through the cross, it breaks the spell of all worldly counterfeits, empowering each of us to love God, love ourselves, and love each other. The world is, therefore, not all grim, not hopeless. We need to remember that love wins. Just look around at the sacrificial love shown in the ministries and fellowships here in this church, and you'll see people being changed by genuine love. These transformed lives are our love stories. And really, that's the best and perhaps the only evidence that we have of our faith. So by all means, please, let's keep talking about love.